Well, welcome everybody to Eyes on Investors. I've got a great guest with me here today, Brant Phillips. He's the owner of Rent Ready Contractors, done tons of real estate investing, lots of different deals, lots of remodeling, and we're going to talk about a lot of things today. Brant's got tremendous experience in lots of different areas, so I'm looking forward to really digging in, Brant, and finding out all the things that you know, and we'll be very interested in that. So you're smiling because I hear a phone ringing, right? It just makes the interview more real.
But not the fax machine.
Yeah. So, and there goes my phone. It's ringing too. So let me turn that off. So, Brant, let's start off by talking about how many deals you have done. How many properties have you owned over the years?
Well, right now I own about 35 rental properties, and I don't know, I've probably flipped 20 or so houses over the last few years, and actually just in the last couple of years is when I've really started flipping and gotten more aggressive with my flips. My rental properties, like I said, are about 35 doors, and for me, that's kind of where I want to be. I had bigger aspirations, but for me, that's a good place. I'm not really wanting to push that too much more just because I really enjoy the flipping side of things, and I wasn't planning on starting a contracting company. It's just kind of the way the kind of how life turned out is like, hey, I've got this opportunity. So I've really been, I spend a lot of my time running the company and helping other investors really, and I still usually have one to two flips going on at a time, to make. But also, I really enjoy flipping houses, so it's kind of been my new business passion the last couple of years.
Okay, so let's talk about flipping houses then, because a lot of people are interested in that. That seems to be working better the last couple of years than it did prior to that. So what is it about flipping houses that appeals to you?
Quick cash. It's an exciting kind of ride, just with my entrepreneurial kind of spirit. And I'm not like a big gambler or anything, but there's something a little bit like Vegas, a little bit like Wall Street, kind of mixed in, between the two. And I really just like analyzing the deal, looking at the numbers, doing the rehab, and game planning the rehab, and really digging into what is going to make this house so compelling over the other houses in the neighborhood, and doing it really quick. It's just exciting to me, and like I said, it is a lot like people ask if it's like those TV shows that used to be all the rage a few years ago.
Like flip
And
my house, that type of stuff.
yeah, flip this house, all that
Flip
stuff. And it actually is. There's like a lot of I guess misinformation on some of those shows, but a lot of it's kind of like that. It's a roller coaster ride for a few weeks, and then when you get the contracts, it's totally worth it. So I enjoy it. It's something.
Okay, so what you do is you let's talk about the process of flipping a house then. You need to find a house. That would be the first step, right? So what do you how is it that you find a house that's appropriate for flipping?
Yeah, the most simplified, recipe to flip a house is you got to find it, finance it, you got to fix it, and then you got to sell it or flip it. Because when I started investing, I was had a full-time corporate job, worked a lot of hours, married, wife, and children. So I didn't have one thing I didn't have time to do was find deals. So I've always relied upon wholesalers and real estate agents to bring me deals. I just never had the time to go find deals. Well, I guess I could have made the time, but I didn't want to use my time for that. So I've
Right.
always used other people to bring me deals. And so that's been one of the keys. And I can tell you that I say no to a lot of deals. And I think one of the biggest obstacles people have when they get started is finding the right deal. And then unfortunately, sometimes they'll pull the trigger on a bad deal just because they're chomping at the bit to do a deal. And I can tell you, like, for at least, I might say no to at least 10. And I recently went through a span of maybe 30 or 40 deals that were, you know, deals, not just junk, but like considerable deals that I just said no to, because it's a tricky market right now. So we have to know to pick the right deals. And then back to back, I picked up two within just a matter of days because they both fit what I thought was going to work out.
Right.
So to me, you know, using other people's time to find deals has been critical for me, because I did not have time to go out and find my own deals.
Right.
Search on the internet, putting out bandit signs, doing mailing campaigns.
Don't want to do that. So you'll go to people who wholesale deals. They already have those. They'll give them to you. You'll look at it and make your own decision as to whether that looks like it'll work or not.
Yeah, and the thing I like that generally best is with the wholesaler, they already have it under contract. So it's kind of like, you know, it's immediately right there. You don't have to go through the whole process of submitting an offer, wonder if it's going to get accepted. And it's kind of just instantaneous gratification. You're like, okay, I've got it. Let's do it. Numbers work. Let's go.
I see. So are there particular wholesalers that you work through, or is there a website that you go to get these deals?
I have a handful, probably like three or four wholesalers that I have really, really, really good relationships with that I've worked the most with. And then I have others that are in the Houston area that send me quite a few deals on emails. But I really stick with three or four wholesalers for the most part, because it's relationships. I know they're not going to waste my time, and I can kind of trust their judgment, and they know they don't send me things that they know that I'm not interested in.
So you know they know what you're looking for, and they'll filter out a lot of stuff before they send it over to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
So the key here then for people listening is, if you want to get deals from wholesalers, go establish some relationships with a few wholesalers, get to know them, let them know you, and then work with them. And once they have confidence that you know what you're doing, you're going to buy their properties, they'll bring the deals to you when they see the good deals.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And the same for in real estate agents as well. I have some agents that will send me deals. Not as often, but it's good to have, because I've had a couple of really, really nice deals that came through agents. And that's just it. When you're building relationships with wholesalers, you're not going to say yes to a bad deal, but when you say yes, when you commit to buy a property, they want to feel confident that you're going to close and that you're going to go forward like you contracted to do, because they have a lot of people that waste their time, or they'll get cold feet right at the end. So that's one of the biggest things, is that you don't waste their time.
I put you on mute there for a second because my phone's ringing. I apologize for that. We're having phone issues today, but I think it's done now. So you don't want to waste their time. So when they send a deal to you, what are you looking for to make that determination as to whether it's going to be a good flip for you, whether it'll be a good investment?
Okay, if it's for a flip, a lot of times it depends on the neighborhood. Of course, we're going to go off the value, and I tell people the minimum after all of your repairs, your purchase price, your repairs, minimum is 70% minimum, but I really like to be in the 60 to 65% of ARV.
Okay. ARV is the after repaired value of the property. How much it'll be worth after you fix it up.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Really, you know, minimum in a good market, or if it's a really, really good neighborhood, you can go 70%. I would not go above it. Just say no, walk away.
Okay.
But get down in that 65%. And then it really comes somewhat on the house, but I'm really usually more concerned with the neighborhood, the amount of inventory in that neighborhood.
Meaning how many properties are on the market?
Yeah, what's for sale, what the competition, and what's the days on the market for that neighborhood. And what are the characteristics of that neighborhood is generally more so important than the house a lot of times itself. And I try to look at, when I buy and fix up a house, I want to make sure that I can make it as nice or nicer than pretty much everything else in the neighborhood and price it, you know, at least in that same price range or even lower. And that's been a formula for success, because if you can have the nicest house in the neighborhood that's priced better than anything else, generally you're going to get all the showings, which means you're going to get the contract.
Yeah, you'll get more interest and more qualified buyers looking at it, yeah. I would imagine, more demand.
Yeah, and always price them to sell. Don't get greedy with pricing. I've done that a couple times, and it's ended up costing me, because for days on the market, it'll sit longer.
So
price them to sell. Don't get greedy with your, you know, with how much you're trying to make.
Don't try to eke every dime out of it. Just, yeah, price it properly, let it move quickly, and be satisfied with that.
Exactly.
Okay, good advice. So, so the thought that comes to my mind then is you're looking at, you know, you want to get like a minimum of, say, 60 to 65% price based on the ARV, but one of those factors is how much it's going to cost to repair. Because let's say the ARV is $100,000, and they're saying, well, we'll sell this house to you for $40,000. You look at that and say, well, that's a really good percentage, but what if it's got, you know, tons of damage and it's going to cost $40,000 to fix up, or some, you know, $50,000, something like that. So at the time that you make the decision to buy the property, do you already have an idea of what it's going to cost to repair?
Yeah, I do, and I guess I have an unfair advantage doing, because I do so many rehabs for other people. What I tell customers or new investors is I have a rule of thumb I'll use just in my mind before I'll even look at a deal, or a wholesaler sends me a deal and they've evaluated the repairs. Say, for example, the average deal or the house is on a flip, or just generally like a total rehab, is say a 1975 to 1990 construction.
Okay.
Dealing with houses that are 20 to 30, 35 years old. Generally, those houses need a full rehab. Paint, carpet, light fixtures, countertops, stubs, tub shower pulls, all that kind of stuff, landscaping. If so, the kind of the equation I use is $10 a square foot times the amount of square foot, square footage. So if it's 1,500 square foot, you times that times 10 is $15,000.
Okay.
Now, that generally does not include roof, foundation, or AC, so I would add those items in accordingly. So if it needed a new roof, say $3,000 or $4,000, AC, better. So you might be in the $25,000 range, or AC, foundation, or roof might be fine, and you're at $15,000, and say it has good cabinets and countertops, so you're going down. But that's just a good way to evaluate a deal without driving around and looking at every deal.
Right.
But that $10, I'll tell you what, that $10 a square foot guideline is almost, I would say at least 70% of all the houses that we do and houses that I look at.
Okay.
So that's a really good guideline to use. Of course, if it's a rental, it's not in bad shape. You can take that number down. They say if it's like, it's a 2005 construction, of course, it just needs a paint and carpet, you're not going to use that guideline.
Right.
That's kind of what I do to quickly, in my mind, calculate repairs.
Okay.
And make a decision on a house.
That's perfect. So the $10 per square foot rule, it applies to really all the cosmetic stuff that's going to be updated and modified in the house. And then, as you mentioned, things, big things like foundation or roof or AC, those would be apart from that, and you would just need to go inspect the property to find out if those are issues or not.
Yes, and what I did, because I get this phone call a lot from investors asking me and wanting to do bids, or they're just analyzing a deal that's not under contract, just because we don't have time to estimate every house that people are just looking at. So I made a website that people can go to. It's called freerehabestimator.com.
Okay, freerehabestimator.com.
Free Rehab Estimator. And there's a link to it also on Rent Ready Contractors.
Okay.
And it's essentially an Excel spreadsheet that goes through, I'd say, 99% of every item that could come up. on a rehab, and they can just plug in square footage or linear feet or what have you, and they can go line by line and analyze the deal pretty quickly.
Oh, perfect. Okay, that sounds like a really good tool. I'm going to go check that out.
We've had a lot of really good feedback on it.
Oh, good, because I teach people over at Lifestyles Unlimited how to do property evaluations, and that question comes up a lot. How do I know how much things are going to cost? Because that's an important factor to know if you've got a good deal or not. So I'll look at that resource and be able to refer people over to it.
Yeah, and I kind of, and those prices on there are also like general contractor prices where they're very, I guess you'd say, safe, where almost worst case scenario. So they, a lot of those things, say if they're going to manage the rehab themselves or get a handyman, they can generally get that stuff done for that price, and then on a lot of items they can actually do it a little bit cheaper.
I see. So
they're safe and conservative numbers when they're estimating their
deal. Right, which is really important when you're doing your estimating to make sure that you're being conservative. So let's talk about your company, Rent Ready Contractors, because you do this kind of work for people all the time. If it's your own property, I assume you have a bit of an advantage because you're paying these guys like a wholesale price, I guess, to go in and do these jobs on your properties. But for other people that need to get all this work done, is there very much difference in price if they went with, say, your company versus a general contractor versus a handyman? What kind of direction do people need to take when they're looking at these rehabs and hiring people to do it?
Well, I'd say on like smaller little handyman jobs, it's definitely in their best interest to just go with a little handyman kind of route. You know, if you're like just doing a single sheetrock patch, things like that, it's not always wise to hire a general contractor. But where the general contractor comes into really the value, I guess you'd say, is like on your larger rehabs. You know, if you're working a full-time job, you don't have much time, you definitely don't want to get hooked up with a bad contractor because it will make your life miserable, which is kind of the Rent Ready story, because I started investing in real estate when I was working a full-time corporate job. And I actually, the first rehab I did, I did a turnkey general contractor remodel, and it went very, very well, very, very painless and easy. And I had lower bids, but I was fearful to go with cheaper guys. And so I paid a little bit more, and there was value there. I was very, very happy with that that process. And so soon after that, I started getting cheaper labor and doing things, you know, myself, I paid for it in the pocket and with headaches.
The quality of the work went down.
Yeah, the quality of the work, the time of not getting the job done in a reasonable time, guys not keeping their word, just, you know, no really attention to details and just cosmetic appeal of a house, whether these guys are just laborers trying to get a paycheck. And so I can tell you that it cost me in a lot of ways, and so that's why I kind of, you know, just stumbled upon there was a huge need for a good company to help investors, you know, do turnkey rehabs for people who didn't feel like babysitting contractors every day and worrying about if their job was going to get done. And then I was always coming from the viewpoints when I bought my first house, my wife and I were living in an apartment. We literally had, we had no money in the bank. This is, we had just paid off our student loans, all of our credit cards, you know, so we were in a good position, we had good credit, but we didn't have money. You know, we were married a couple of years with a kid and just trying to make it. And then I got this crazy idea to start investing in real estate. So to me, time was very, very valuable. And so, like with my first rehab, I was able to rehab it, rent it, and get a renter in before my first mortgage, first payment was due.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always had that mindset that I'm getting this house rehabbed, I'm getting it rented before my payment's even due, and it wasn't even an option. And I've kept that mindset now that time is absolutely critical with rehabs.
Yeah. Well, and you were mentioning that if you have a contractor who's not reputable or they're not doing quality work, that there's a price to pay for that. When I was preparing for this interview, I went and looked at your Rent Ready contractor company on the Lifestyles Unlimited website, where people, you know, that have used your service can post comments. And it was interesting. You've got, I think it was 35 positive comments, no negative comments. I mean, it's just clearly you guys are doing the right thing because people are very happy with how you're doing it.
Well, we just pay them to give us good comments.
Oh, that's... There you go.
it's not an easy business to not have any negative feedback.
Right.
I can tell you it's painful sometimes because rehabbing is
unexpected problems that come up.
There's all kinds of problems. I can tell you we've taken losses on a lot of jobs. You know, if there was a problem on our end or guys did something wrong to make customers happy. And, you know, unfortunately, just from experience and from other people, I know a lot of contractors won't do that. They're looking to give their customer every chance they get. And we take, you know, it's I really enjoy the Rent Ready contractors because it's fun seeing people. I'm very entrepreneurial, so I like to see people taking action. And it's fun to help them, see them succeed, you know, do well. So
yeah,
we're proud of them. Not having any negative comments. We work hard to keep it like that.
It sounds great. It's very commendable. So I wanted to tell you that last week I sent an email out to all of our members, all of the Lifestyles Unlimited members in Houston, about 2,500 people, and I asked them the question, what is the biggest challenge that you have in real estate investing? And the feedback that I got, about 60% of the people said that getting financing, you know, have be qualified for buying properties, finding the money to buy the properties, that was their biggest challenge. And you, I know, have experience with financing, you know, the deals that you've been doing. So I want to talk about financing and see if we can probe this and understand what can people do to get financing. So what kind of financing have you done? What do you have experience with?
Well, I've been fortunate that when I started investing, conventional financing was available, and quite honestly, it was very, very easy. A little bit too easy. Like I said, and my wife and I were living in an apartment. Didn't have any money. We just had good credit and good. We had good income, good credit, good jobs, and I was able to go out in the very first year and buy 10 properties, rental properties, all in the first year, and get those. I purchased them all with hard money. Rehabbed them, full rehabs on all of them, and refinanced them very, very quickly. And so that was my first introduction to financing. And I remember just like, this just seems like this is a little bit too easy. And come to find out, it really was too easy. But what happened was I was so aggressive with my buying, was around the same time I was buying number 10, I was also buying number 11, 12, and 13 at the same time. And then not doing my homework on the financing end, when I called my mortgage broker, which is Blake at Capital Concepts, I called him, hey, I need some more refinances. He's like, well, you can't get any more. You're tapped out. I was like, oh, that didn't sound too good. So that led me to using partnerships to do some deals. So quickly got on the phone, started racking my brain, even with butterflies in my stomach, you know, kind of making these phone calls, hey, I've got some investment properties. Would you be interested in using your credit to refinance out of these? And we'll, you know, split any profits that are in cash flow when we sell it.
Who were you calling when you were calling these people? Were these people you knew?
Well, not all of them, actually. I honestly just, like, my wife is a hairstylist, and, of course, she knew about my situation, my predicament, and just through the course of her talking to customers, small talk, one day she's like, hey, I was just talking about, someone's asking what your husband does, and she told him, she's like, oh, I'd be interested in that. I called the lady up, didn't know who she was. She came over and hung out with my wife and I had dinner and met the family, and a couple weeks later, we're buying a house together. We still have that property. One was a cousin, And one was actually a mutual, it was one of my wife's clients, but also someone I had met a couple times. I knew I was pretty well off financially. So I called him. He actually bought several houses together. And who was the other? And one was actually just a gym. Then I formed another partnership with another investor like myself on down the line. And then that's when we kind of we learned about private money financing. And so a friend of mine, we partnered, created a partnership, and started raising private money together and using both of our expertise, because he was really, really good at actually finding deals.
Okay.
And I was good, of course, at rehabbing and managing. So we kind of partnered and started doing deals using private money financing.
So by private money, you went out to kind of like what you were doing before, just talking to individuals. When you and this other fellow got together and he was going and finding the money, he was just, you guys were getting money from different individuals and pooling it into a fund? Or how did that work?
Well, basically, it's a private mortgage. With a private individual, and what we did, and this is what my primary source of financing still to this time, is we find people who have either cash, or it could be an IRA, or some type of money that they're not using or not using properly. It could be in a CD or money market account that they can pull out that they're getting, say, 1 or 2%, or losing money, and we essentially agree on terms. Most of our loans are interest-only loans, and we'll create a mortgage. We have a closing, a title company. They essentially become the bank.
Okay.
And use the money to purchase and renovate houses. And terms are very flexible, but generally they're somewhere from we have them as low as 6% to 12% interest-only from as little as 1 year to, I think we have one out at 5 years.
Okay.
Which is very similar to a lot of your small banks, because I have several bank loans through local banks that I've also been able to get financing through. And so it's just a much easier process going through private lenders.
Right.
It's really, you know, handshake kind of stuff, and then everything's done with the title company, but there's not a big loan committee and all this kind of stuff. You show them the deal. If they like it, you agree on terms and get the paper.
And then you can move forward.
Yeah, it's super, super easy, and there's just abundance of money out there that people don't realize, and they're looking just – a lot of this money has just been taken out of the stock market. It's just sitting.
It's in the bank earning hardly any interest.
Yeah, people don't realize it's just there. It's waiting for, you know, I always say that good deals and savvy, you know, good investors, good trustworthy people will attract money.
It's right.
You become like a magnet.
Are you and this fellow still doing these private money loans, or?
That's all I do. I closed on a house last week that I used private money on, and I've got another one under contract that I've got private money lined up.
Okay.
And yeah, I would say that's my.
That's your primary source of funding.
Money.
So what can people do? Like, do you know of any company that actually? That an individual could go to, kind of like the brokers private money loans, so that they can get access to these, or do they need to establish their own relationships with private lenders?
It's all through networking. It really all comes through networking. And when I first started investing, I networked a lot, just going to lifestyles meetings and other local meetings, calling friends, family members, and things like that. But it's all essentially came through networking.
Okay.
I will say that when I began investing, like I said, I used only hard money, and I still highly recommend that people use hard money lenders, especially your beginning investors. I really actually like to see them use hard money, because to me, the new investors will at times pull the trigger too early. Like I mentioned, they're just so eager to do a deal that they'll go buy what's actually not a deal.
Right.
And what I like about hard money lenders is they're kind of a safeguard, meaning that they're not going to lend an investor money on a deal unless it's a deal, unless the numbers work.
Right.
And so that was actually a really good way for me to get started, because I've built the relationships with the hard money lenders, and I still have that relationship. I talked to one the other day because there was a deal I was looking at. I wasn't sure if a private lender was going to come through. It was a really big deal, and it had some definitely, I guess we'd say, issues that I was a little bit concerned about. So I called some lenders. I called my hard money guy as a backup and just kind of to pick his brain as well. End up backing out of that deal. But I remember my first year of investing, there was a deal I really, really wanted. And my hard money lender is like, there's no way. He's like, I'll loan you half of what you want. You know, I got so frustrated. I'm like, wow, this is great. And then hindsight, it wasn't that good of a deal. So I recommend hard money is a really, really good route.
That's a great point, because the hard money lender is going to be making sure that they're protecting their investment. They want to make sure you're getting a good deal so that they get the return that they're looking for, and they're not putting their money at risk. So in a way, even though they're looking out after their own interests, they're actually your advocate to make sure that you're getting into a good deal. I like that.
And like Dale says about the progression of a real estate investor going from single family homes to apartments, that's the way I see with financing. It's good to start with hard money. So you learn the process, you get more experience, more credibility. Then you can progress towards using private money. And because, I mean, it is real estate, people can get burned in real estate. You know, as many people make money, a lot of people, if they don't do things the right way, can lose money. So this way, it's a really good way to get started in training. And then before you're going to take someone's retirement money, you want to make sure that you know and you've been through this before you just go start borrowing people's money.
That makes sense, because a private lender is probably not a real estate investor. They're not going to be able to analyze the deal and determine if it's a good deal or not. They're lending you the money and having faith in you that you know what you're doing, that, and so it's better to have some experience before you go get private money.
It definitely is, and because if you don't know what you're doing and you're going out there and borrowing people's money and you haven't had that experience and that training, you don't have the right mentors, that can be a disaster.
Yeah.
If you take your time, do it right, practice, if you will, you know, use hard money lenders, use that safeguard, get that experience, then what has become, what could be a risky situation has turned into one of the very, very best investment opportunities for you and your private lender. But if only do it the right way.
Right. Now, one of the challenges that people have told me they have when they go do hard money is that they need to qualify for a conventional refinancing, or they need to qualify to refinance the hard money loan into a conventional mortgage, you know, after they get the house fixed up. And if they don't qualify for a conventional mortgage, then they're unable to get a hard money loan. So are there any options for people that are in that situation?
Well, you know, I think that private money would be an option to get refinanced if you have a lender that's going to loan you that money long term. However, I don't think that's the best option. I only see two options. One is that you could find a partner. You could partner with somebody and use their credit to refinance you out. And or two, if that's what the hard money lenders, if you can't get qualified for your long-term loan, I think there's some underlying issues that individual probably needs to get taken care of. And what's not actually the answer they want to hear, but maybe they should use a little bit of patience, analyze their situation, you know, figure out why they can't get that refinancing.
Right.
Then, you know, a year, 2 years, what have you, and do the steps required to get to that position. But, you know, I'm very entrepreneurial. So if you hit that dead-end road, look at other avenues. And what I did was I turned to partnerships, and then I turned to private money. So those would be options. But at the same time, if they go that route, I would say they need to work on their personal.
Yeah, maybe they need to build their credit score up, or they need to get more cash in the bank,
yeah.
Things like that. Okay. Would you recommend for somebody that doesn't have cash, if they're looking at doing flips, you know, flipping houses to build up some cash so that they can go get financing and do long term, do you see that as a risky thing for them to be going and doing rehabs if they got private money or if they partnered up with somebody? Actually, if they partner up with someone who's experienced with that, then they'll be able to learn how to do it, even if they don't have their own money to put up for it. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, if they're going to partner with somebody and they're not bringing cash to the table, then I don't think anyone's going to partner with them. So it's usually, if someone's bringing cash, they're expecting you to bring the experience and to do all the work. So that they essentially, because my partners a lot of times won't even look at the house ever. And so they're relying on me to do that and just basically send them a check at the end.
Yeah.
So what I say, because this is actually a very, very common mindset or game plan. People say, well, I can't get refinanced on my rental, so I want to start flipping some houses and build up some quick cash. And in theory, it's good. In a practice, it's a little bit more difficult than that, because I like to see people go out and do some rehabs and do rentals, because it's so, so easy. When you get into the flips, it is more complicated. And I know one of the best experiences I ever had was on the very first flip I did. I lost money. At the end of the day, I lost about, I think it was $3,000. But it was a great learning experience, because I did everything the wrong way. I took too long on my rehab, overspent on my rehab, because I didn't have a good game plan in the beginning. We're kind of like, okay, let's do this, now let's do that, which is just a disaster waiting to happen. I priced it wrong. I got greedy. I pushed the value of the house rather than making it appealing offer, you know, the irresistible offer, we call it. It was the best rehab at the best price, best product, best price. I did not do that. I accepted a contract with a very shaky buyer. They ended up losing their financing, so I had to go back, put it on the market again, and this was in a hard money loan. So by the time, you know, 7 months later, end up, like I said, losing about $3,000. And so I've used all that whole experience on my other, you know, on my other flips. I went through a streak where I had about 8 flips and had contracts all in less than 10 days. And so, but all that came from doing, you know, 50 to 100 other rehabs in the meantime of rentals and with customers. So I've really honed my skill.
Right.
For someone to just go out and start flipping houses, it can be done. But I'd like to see them make sure they've read several books, they've been at least to a boot camp or two, and had some good mentorship, and really, really, really make sure they find a good property and that they know what they're doing when it comes to rehabbing. So it can be done. I've seen it done with new investors, but I've seen the opposite happen, where they go out and do a bad deal, sits on the market, and they lose money. Right. So you got to do it the right way, but it can be done.
Okay. So what books do you recommend that people read? Do you have some that you can recommend that would help them with this?
You can tell the ordinary. It's, you know, I started like with Kiyosaki, like everybody else. But I think Stephen Covey is pretty impactful for me. The 7 Habits, actually, almost more than any other real estate book. In terms of, I did read a pretty cool book. It was called Private Lenders in Your Own Backyard, or Investors in Your Own Backyard. That kind of got my, and he does not talk about real estate. He just talked about finding partners for your deals and joint venturing. So those are just a few that come to mind. But I've read everything by Kiyosaki, and he's been the most, I guess, inspiring to me in terms of business.
Yeah, I've been very helped by him as well. I read his stuff years ago, and that got me interested in all this. And he just lays out in a very understandable way that a lot of the principles and concepts that we want to work with. I want to go back and touch on remodeling and rehabbing just a little bit more. What do you recommend people do in order to make sure that they get a good contractor? How should they, you know, How can they determine whether they're getting a good contract or not, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, I think they need to have verify some references. And I'd say that's the most important thing, that they want to make sure that this contractor has done this before and that they've done a good job with multiple people. I tell people, you know, verify with hard money lenders, I think is a very good source. They have they've seen and have approved contractors' work.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, Lifestyles. That's where I actually tell most people, I'm like, go to the vendor list for contractors and other investors. And one of the you know, fatal flaws I see other contractors make is they can't handle that when they get real busy, the amount of workload that comes in. And so the kind of the, you know, the problems with the general contractor's business model is, one is a lot of times if they're doing the work themselves, they're own the company, so they're writing paychecks, they're bidding jobs, they're going to buy materials, and they're actually doing the work. You can't do that. That's the, these guys are really good guys and have good intentions, but their business model
is broken.
And so then they'll say they'll get another job or two or three jobs, and then that's where you run into, why isn't anybody working on my house for 3, 4, 5 days in a row? It's because he's at Home Depot bidding another job, working on another job because he doesn't want to pay somebody. So I recommend, if you're going to use someone like that, you need to find out how busy their workload is, and you need to hold them accountable to a time span. And, you know, of course, there needs to be penalties if they go over that.
I was going to ask, yeah, is it standard to build in penalties then? If you say this job needs to be done in a week, and for each day that you go over, there's going to be some associated penalty.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Okay.
We factor that into all of our bids, unless there's like it's a real thick permitting job, because sometimes those things are out of control.
Right.
But 80% of rehabs, we put a time frame on our bids. And what I do just to keep us safe as well as the customer, I generally will add on 7 to 10 days of what I really think is going to take. It's still a reasonable amount of time frame. And then we start taking money off after that. And then also just make sure they have agreed upon draw schedules, because that I've gotten that phone call a lot where people call me and the contractor walked off, and most times they walked off because they got paid and therefore lost their incentive to.
So don't give them the money until the work is actually done.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a tricky situation because you do have to give them some money.
Well, they're going to have costs. They have to go buy material.
Sometimes we dump $4,000 or $5,000 into a project in the first 3 or 4 days. We buy a big material dump. We're throwing down tile and tubs and things like that. We'll dump thousands and thousands of dollars the first few days. So we won't start a job if we don't have a check, because we've been burned by customers before.
Right.
So it's kind of a catch-22, and you just have to find that agreeable spot for you and your contractor, because what I say is you don't want the contractor to get too far ahead of you in terms of money, but the contractor doesn't want you to get too far ahead of him. So maybe instead of doing 3 draws, break it into 5 draws or whatever works, but you've got to give them some money, but it can't be an unreasonable amount without a wall.
Right. Okay. That totally makes sense. It's got to be a two-way street.
Yeah. But sometimes I've seen customers will be unreasonable. Like say, we say you don't want to pay them until the end of the job. Well, if you owe them $10,000 and the only thing left is a couple of touch-up spots on paint and things like that, then maybe give them a little bit something, hold back $500. Whatever's reasonable.
Right.
I was in law enforcement for my first 7 years out of college, and there was a sign on the wall at the police academy. I always remember, it says common sense and good judgment. Just do that. you know, and you're more likely going to be fine.
Yeah, excellent. Good advice. So the last subject I want to cover with you is being an entrepreneur. You mentioned that you had a corporate job. You broke away from that. You've got your own business now. You've got all these investment properties. You've done all these rehabs, flips, you know, buy and hold, all these different things. So I'm interested, what is it about being an entrepreneur? What is it that motivates you to structure your life the way that you have, to where you don't have that corporate job and you're doing your own thing?
Well, you know, I didn't realize I was an entrepreneur. I just thought I was I just thought I was an unhappy person for a while, and I didn't realize that I'm like, I'm just not supposed to be here, because I had all these ideas and I could do things, you know, not necessarily better, but differently, more effective, and use my time other ways. And so that was, after a while, I was like, okay, I need to stop complaining about the way these guys do things here. I just need to remove myself and pursue my own ideas and my own visions and dreams. And so that's always been my motivation. When I first identified it, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago, that I wasn't getting the most out of life, and that I wanted more, and I wanted more, really more, you know, time and freedom, and just to be able to help people and have, you know, more of a purpose in my life rather than what I was doing, which is just a corporate sales job selling chemicals and soaps. Wasn't, you know, too much fun. I try to pursue my passion, and like doing stuff that makes money and spending time with the family and working out and just doing stuff I like to do. And so that's my motivation. That's, and, you know, to be quite honest, I probably work more now. I'd say I work more now than I did back then, or at least as much, but it doesn't feel like work. You know, I wake up in the morning and I'm, yeah, excited to go out, and there's challenges, but they're fun most of the time. And it's been an incredibly enjoyable ride so far. Although it's, you know, I can say that it's not for everybody. I can tell you that much, because when I first quit, and some of the risks I've taken, it's scary. And you know, it's a different threshold, and I know it's not for everybody.
Right.
But if it's for you and you've got that calling inside, you got to act on it, because, you know, you wake up old person one day and you're going to regret it. And I just don't want to have any regrets. So yeah. I'd rather go down in flames saying I tried rather than not saying I played it safe. And then just for me, that wouldn't work. So.
Yeah, that I totally relate to what you're saying. Had similar experience where I've had corporate jobs for many years, and I always did things on the side, but it wasn't until about 4 years ago that I decided I don't want to do this anymore. I've got to, you know, I'm in my 40s. I need to actually accomplish my dreams and go after the things that I've been wanting to do, instead of limiting myself by just feeling like I have safety in this job. One of the things you mentioned that's intriguing to me is that when we were talking about financing, you said, well, when challenges come up, I'm an entrepreneur, I figure out how to overcome them. And that, I think, is an element or characteristic of somebody who can succeed in doing real estate, because there are challenges that come up. And the challenge may be initially being unable to get financing to do deals. So what is it that, you know, how do you approach resolving these challenges that you probably face constantly in your investing, in your business, and all these things? How do you face that? How do you overcome those?
Well, it's just not an option. You just have to. To me, I mean, I've been asked to speak a few times, and I've been able to do some workshops, me and a friend of mine, and we actually... one of the main things we teach, and I like to teach this very first, upfront, foremost, most important thing, it's not your financing, it's not ability to find deals or rehab deals, whatever, it's the mindset that you have is the most important thing over anything else, period, you know, in the story is because I've had a lot of challenges, a lot of obstacles, a lot of, you know, oh crap, what do I do now? And whenever something happens, or when you get something that you feel like you can't overcome, or, you know, whatever, you just, I don't know, it's just not an option to me to, like, give up and give in. Now, sometimes it's been painful, I guess, or I have to work really, really hard, or I have to make, you know, a phone call or tell somebody, hey, this happened, and you just have to be honest and ethical and say, look, this is what happened, I'm very sorry, or whatever it is, or I have to tell my wife, hey, you know, we're a little short this month because this deal, whatever, didn't work out the way I thought it was going to work out, you know. But you do things in an honest, ethical manner, and you make it right, whatever that may be. And for me, that's been minimal to the amount of stuff that's been good. But whenever stuff happens, you just have to find a way to get it done. And you have to have that mindset, because if you don't, then you're going to take, you know, the easier path, which is going to be some type of shortcut, which is not going to be good for your long term. Because to me, I mean, your name, your reputation is everything. So just when stuff happens, you have to be accountable and make it right, whatever that may be.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the book by Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits of Successful People, was a good book to read. And I think that really touches on what you're talking about here, that that book's not about real estate. It's really about the mind and how we approach life and how we see things, what our perspective is, what we choose it to be. And I found that in doing the real estate investing and doing this entrepreneurial stuff, that it does make all the difference. That mindset, for anyone listening, if they haven't read that book, I would highly recommend it, as you did as well. Because if you can get your mindset right, you can accomplish pretty much anything you set your mind to do. But if you don't have the right mindset, or you don't have the integrity, both your personal, you know, especially your personal integrity, it's going to be a painful road.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Well, Brant, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this interview today. I learned some things, and I've been inspired by what you've done. I've got 3 rental properties, and I'm an apartment deal. And I'm just sitting here thinking, if you can do all that stuff, I can do it too. I think I need to raise the bar for myself. So I'm feeling inspired, and I'm going to go out there and hit the road and get some more stuff done.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I really enjoyed the interview, and yeah, that's what I've liked about Lifestyles in my network meetings is I go and you go meet people like, man, look at what they're doing. I haven't done anything compared to what they're doing.
And, exactly. So well, thank you again for your time. And again, if anybody wants to go take a look at your company, rentreadycontractors.com is the website, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, excellent. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.